I'm Jody, the mom.
And I'm Dr. Barr, the doc.
And this is Mom and Doc Talk, where we talk all things healing pans and pandas.
We bring together the mom experience and the doc expertise to give you the information and tools you need to help make the next right decision to get your child back.
Let's dive in.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Mom and Doc Talk. We are joined today by Dr. Ben Zarensky, a member of our team here at Resilience Naturopathic, and we're going to talk a little bit about when you might have signs that therapy might be really beneficial. And I want to give us just a little bit of framework for this, because to start off, first and foremost, pans and pandas is an inflammatory process, and you cannot use therapy, talk therapy, to make an inflammatory process go away. So if you are just dealing with inflammation, no amount of talk therapy or behavioral therapy is going to likely see much change, because what you're dealing with is not about behavior. It's about inflammation and the dysregulation of the basal ganglia, which is impacting the ability to control emotions. It's impacting the ability to cognitively process things. It's also impacting the ability for control of motor movements, which is where the tics come into play. Therapy cannot make those things stop, but therapy can have an important role in full recovery from pans pandas. So let's dive in and talk a little bit about therapy and its role and when it might be time to consider it. So welcome, Dr. Zarensky, or Dr. Ben, as your clients so lovingly call you.
Thanks, Dr. Bark. Great to be back with the two of you.
So what are your thoughts? When do you generally recommend that people start considering therapy?
Yeah, good question. So really the entire time, and I know we touched on this last time we were together also, but I think it's relevant, and you know, it's always good to hear it again. But I'd like to go back to aphorism 9. This is Hahnemann's definition of health. It's relevant for today. And I'm just going to read it real quick. This is the Kunzli translation. And Hahnemann writes, "In the state of health, the spirit-like vital force, which is dynamic, animating the material organism, reigns in supreme sovereignty. It maintains the sensations and activities of all the parts of the living organism in a harmony that obliges wonderment. The reasoning spirit who inhabits this organism can thus freely use this healthy living instrument to reach the lofty goal of human existence." So again, there's a lot in that definition, but a couple things really stand out for me. Maintains sensations and activities in all parts. And so, yes, the remedy can help. It can sort of be a signal to the body to help facilitate healing, but there's also a will or an element of the individual who can sort of take part or take the reins and help to steer some of this process when that person is ready or sort of available for that. Another definition or aphorism that sort of is relevant for today is susceptibility. And this is, you know, the aphorism 31 in the Organon. I'm not going to read the whole thing here, but when we're susceptible to inimical forces or other noxious agents or such, and that can be physical or psychical, that causes abnormal sensations and functions in the body, which, you know, ends up as disease or other signs or symptoms that are a deviation away from the healthy state. Yes, you just mentioned that therapy, you know, cognitive therapy cannot sort of help some of these clients or conditions that we work with. But if there's a way to access the body through, you know, and sensation and function in the body, there's a way we can sort of also access the mind or the mental state. And, you know, I don't want to go on too far here, but there's a wonderful book called Molecules of Emotion by this woman, Candace Pert, who is a researcher at Johns Hopkins. She actually helped to discover the opiate receptor. And in her book, Molecules of Emotion, she talks about how the body is not a mindless machine. The body and the mind are one. She had lectured and written the important role of perception and awareness in health and longevity, how awareness can actually transform matter and create an entirely new body. So there's a dynamic influence that our mind can have on our body. The idea that form follows thought, it's the same way that a homeopathic remedy works, that dynamic force that can stimulate change and progress within a system. Now, a remedy is potentized, it's diluted and succussed, and that's what sort of gives its, you know, the dynamic force that can affect change in the body. But if we can become aware of sensation or function, we can also sort of implement change physically and sort of affect some of our symptoms. And, you know, I'll let you sort of respond to what I'm saying, but, you know, I have more to add to it, but I just wanted to sort of touch on that. And the idea is you can start to access proprioception or sort of sensation in your function in your own body just by taking your shoes off and having your barefoot on the ground. There's 200,000 proprioceptors in each of the bottom of our 2 feet. There's a lot of information that can sort of decrease inflammation or sort of affect posture just by the way that we stand, and taking foam shoes off or sort of being more present in our body. And that likewise can affect our mind or mental symptoms as well.
Mm-hmm. So you talked about a couple of different things, not really directly like talk therapy or OCD specific therapies or anything like that. So I think that the things you just shared are more in the realm of the occupational therapy and physical therapy type of space, which can be more beneficial on the earlier side. I think that when we are thinking more about the talk therapy, you know, like seeing a counselor, doing exposure response prevention, habit reversal therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy for OCD or for anxiety, those types of things, we're going to have a different time frame for when we would be most likely to benefit. So earlier on, yes, the occupational and physical therapy, the things related to getting back connected to your body and helping with any of the ways that there have been some disruptions in the connectivity between function and the brain. Absolutely. When it comes to other types of therapies, like the talk therapies, the place that's going to be most effective is going to depend on the individual. So it could be early on. There could be things with older kids, especially younger kids, probably not as much, though it depends on the individual with everything, with recovery, right? So when we're dealing with stuff that is about talking, you've got to be able to connect with what it is that you're experiencing, for one. And many kids with PANS PANDAS will have a flare and they are out of their minds, like they are possessed by a different being. Parents say this frequently. Their kid is gone. And then they come back and have no recollection of what just happened. Kids will actually go and destroy a room in the middle of a rage flare and come back to themselves and say, what happened here? And no matter what you say to them, they cannot connect with what they're seeing around them having been caused by themselves. And so they need to be doing well enough to have the ability to connect what's happening, their experience, to themselves. Being able to do the cognitive work, the cognitive skills that are required to be effective in any of these therapies, the willingness to participate, and their inflammation needs to be controlled enough that they have the capacity to incorporate any of the things that they're learning. So this is usually a little further along in recovery with PANS PANDAS. So the physical aspects of therapy, earlier on, more useful. The cognitive and behavioral and talk-based therapy, more beneficial a little later on. That said, PANS is a family disease, right? And so there is benefit potentially for the family to get support throughout the healing process so that parents have the ability to process what they're going through with their child, what they're going through together, because PANS doesn't just affect the kid. You know, that's why we say family disease. It affects the kid. It affects the parents. It affects the marriage of the parents. It affects the other children in the home. It can really trigger an awful lot of things from people's childhood too. PANS doesn't come from nowhere. It's an autoimmune condition. Autoimmunity tends to run in families. So we are likely to see that a parent starts to connect with their own childhood stuff that was probably PANS that got missed. Maybe a milder stage of PANS, but probably PANS that got missed. And so there's a lot of benefit to doing therapy for the adults early on and potentially the family as a whole, and for unaffected children who don't have PANS. It's really beneficial for the kid who has PANS when they've reached the point that their flares are much more controlled. From a homeopathic perspective, usually if they've gotten through, I would say that they're in or through the pendulum swing of healing. And so the pendulum swing of healing is where we start to see that they're having a lot more of a typical immune response, and sometimes even seemingly overactive typical immune response, where they went from not getting sick at all and just having neuropsychiatric flares to getting sick all the time. So when we start to see more normal immune function, that's a sign that it might be time where therapy could be beneficial. Do you want to, either of you want to respond to any of that I just said?
Yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying. And I think that's one of the amazing parts effectiveness of a remedy is that if it's say like a belladonna, or if there's a child in fight or flight, or any client really that we work with, fight or flight, or even freeze, homeopathy can signal that person's body to sort of feel more safe. And so now there's less of that direct to aggressive behavior or destruct, so instead of escalating with the right remedy and the right dosing strategy, now there's more sort of a inhibition or an understanding or even an awareness. So in some ways, these remedies can help to cultivate awareness in these kids. And now if there's something in that person's environment or even within them that feels unsafe, rather than, running away or becoming aggressive or just freezing, that person has the resources to sort of have a perspective or a dialogue, or maybe it doesn't just escalate the behavior, but now that remedy has helped to make that response less intense, shorter lasting. And now there's more of an ability to have a discussion or an understanding. It still may be an overwhelming symptom, but the intensity of it all is the volume's turned down because of that remedy. And now we're sort of on a different trajectory, less sort of emergency and dramatic response, but now we can sort of work with a more appropriate immune response. And, like you just said, with the pendulum swing and allergies, I think this is similar, where it's okay, now we're shifting out of that fight, flight, or freeze and more into a sort of an awareness of how we can work or manage with what's happening inside or around us, and it's, even if it's not feeling safe.
Mm-hmm. So like what you guys are talking about is exactly what my family went through. What you were talking about, Dr. Ben, with the physical type therapy, that's literally what we did with my girls, both of them, in the very beginning. And it was really important because some of the stuff that they were dealing with, homeopathy wasn't going to help with. And so addressing those things, but I also think that it sort of helped in a way where through physical therapy, we were talking about symptoms more. And so they were getting a better idea of kind of diving deeper and considering what things feel like, where they are in the body, stuff like that. So I feel like that helped a little bit. And then what you were saying, Dr. Barr, is in the beginning, it's really hard. And I tried with Avery in the beginning when things were totally out of control, because I felt so desperate to support her in what was happening. And I felt like I needed to do something to help the mental aspect of what she was going through. At the time, I didn't know how important provider fit was, and, found a therapist that didn't know anything about PANS, and it was just an absolute mess. It was more about me trying to help him understand that, this isn't how she always is. And just because she had OCD last time she saw you doesn't mean she's going to have OCD this next time. And so it was really, really a difficult thing to do in the beginning. I would imagine that having a therapist that is familiar with
Pans and Pandas would have been a little, would have made it a little bit easier. And I know those are starting to become available. You know, there's therapists out there that are familiar. But it was not a good situation for us in the beginning. But then at some point we got far enough in with homeopathy and there was this shift and you started talking to me about, okay, like maybe it's time to start doing therapy to kind of parse out what is still going on that could potentially be still part of a symptom picture. And then also, do we have pieces of trauma or do we have habits mm-hmm. or something like that? And that's where therapy could start to help right. in that moment.
And that's one of the signs that I have found that we might be getting to the place that we need to look at therapy is when we stop seeing the rapid fluctuations and have more steady state of some symptoms that are more persistent between flares and between remedy adjustments. If they're more constant, steady state, regardless of how they're doing otherwise, we might be dealing with something that is less dynamic and more learned or habit or, again, something that would benefit from some processing. And so this can be really important for lingering anxiety, sometimes lingering OCD, because the way I will describe OCD frequently is that OCD is like walking a trail into a hillside, that it takes time of repeated walking in the exact same space to wear down the trail. But it once it's worn down and it gets worn down enough, you can't just stop walking the trail and expect grass to regrow. You have to stop walking the trail and you have to get the dirt so that it's able to receive some seeds and give it some time for the seeds to take root and then start to germinate and grow before you can no longer see the trail. And so sometimes there are thoughts that stay stuck that were triggered by PANS, by inflammation, but that have become so ingrained into the neural pathways that having some support to challenge the intrusive and repetitive thoughts or to adjust the way that we respond to them too. Because another thing that we have to remember is so much of PANS, PANDAS, and any mental health condition has some aspects of it that are rooted in normal behavior, normal experience, and they're essentially extensions of normal. They're just reached the point that they are now interfering with normal function and the ability to move past them. I tell people all the time, we all have intrusive and repetitive thoughts. It's just our ability to cope with them and what we do as in response to the intrusive or repetitive thoughts, how intense, how frequent they are. And this is where sometimes therapy for OCD can become beneficial. When we've reached the point that there's not as much fluctuation in presentation, we're not seeing it present only with when exposed to a trigger or in a flare. Homeopathy is still helpful in this realm. This is where homeopathy plus therapy together is more effective than either alone, because we have to work on the learned or acquired aspects of it, in addition to the part that is still related to the susceptibility. Another place that this comes in really importantly is with, as you mentioned, Jody, trauma and grief, because a lot of times kids will see that they are doing better and they're starting to see all the things that they missed. And they'll start to have their own grief for the trips they didn't get to go on, the friendships they've lost, the various different changes that have happened, or the trauma that they've experienced as a result of PANS. And a lot of times these are really helpful to process in a therapy or counseling session accompanied by homeopathy. Some people can process all of this stuff with homeopathy alone. Some people can. And some people just need a little bit of extra support to get through. And so homeopathy can still address the unique susceptibility you have, because again, with trauma, we'll put a link to the episodes that we've got on trauma. We've got a three-part series on trauma specifically that is really beneficial to listen to. But we're not all going to have the same response to trauma. We're not all going to have the same response to grief. And so homeopathy can still address our specific way that we're responding. Are we shutting down? Are we getting angry? Are we getting sad? Are we more anxious? What physical symptoms are we having? All of these things are part of the homeopathic perspective and the just ability to process through with a therapist comes together. So those are the places that I think are really, really beneficial for the kids with PANS to get that type of therapy after we've worked through the physical therapy, occupational therapy, et cetera.
Can we stay on this time though? Because like this moment where we're going from like not having the symptoms anymore as much and our kiddos are switching into doing better and maybe starting to process their own grief and sadness and whatever it might be, like this is the caregiver time, like the prime caregiver time, because this is when I switched into really having more time and space to think about what was going on up here. Mm-hmm. And so I went into some pretty extreme grieving. And also I was still in the space that you talked about just a second ago, where I was expecting homeopathy to perfect Avery. Mm-hmm. And I was expecting that it was going to fix everything. And I spent a long time there, and I would imagine that therapy would have helped quite a bit with me moving through that piece. Cause I think I stayed in that part for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I think that like when you get to that spot, like if I had a do it all over again, that's one thing that I would definitely do. Everyone would be in therapy, because everybody's got to switch out of PANS mode and into what moving forward looks like.
And I think that's part of this is the nature of how homeopathy works. And, you know, antipathy would be sort of countering a single symptom, and, you know, that can be helpful, but it's palliative. It's not sort of healing ultimately. Allopathy is sort of creating a new morbific condition that's sort of stronger, suppressing the initial symptoms that we're trying to address. Homeopathy, if we're on the right remedy, we're introducing a sort of an artificial disease that's stronger than the total symptom picture that's presenting. But it's also going to, if we're on the right remedy, it can make what is present more intense, you know, longer lasting, or, you know, more frequent. And for some of the older clients or the parents that I work with, you know, oftentimes if we're at a follow-up, you know, it seems like they're worse because they're having more grief or there's more shame or you name what emotion. But, you know, usually in those follow-ups, we're not leaving that remedy or making any adjustment because we're healing. We're sort of moving through that rather than just sort of covering it up or suppressing it or moving it to the side. And, you know, that sentiment is shared by clients that I work with. Like, yeah, things are worse now, but I feel like it's better because I'm addressing it and sort of going to be able to transcend the symptom. You know, let's hold on, let's follow up again in 4 weeks. And usually that next visit, things are more settled or there's sort of less of that. And that's healing. That's not just sort of hiding a symptom or sort of covering up what's trying to manifest.
Jody, you've definitely said that to me more than once. When you've gotten into a spot, you're like, this doesn't feel comfortable, but I feel like it's important. And I feel like this actually is what needs to be happening. Speaking as somebody who is working through her own 46 plus year journey of suppressing all of the things, I am very aware of the not connecting to something doesn't mean it's not really there, right? And that we don't necessarily need to use medications to suppress something. We can suppress things with our own thoughts and our own behaviors. And so sometimes when we're healing, we do see these things start to reemerge. And this is a place where therapy can be really helpful to effectively talk through them as they are coming more to the forefront, where you're having a healthier response and acknowledging the experience and the thoughts and the feelings that you're having. And so that's a perfect shifting of gears to talking a little bit more about the parents getting the support that they need beyond just how they're feeling about things. They might need some support also in parenting. And no, you can't parent PANS away either. But you do have to adjust and adapt your parenting when the child gets PANS. Your expectations, for the most part, go out the window, right? You just change what you expect from them, what you expect from yourself. You change the way you discipline. You might not discipline at all because you can't discipline PANS away. And you're aware of that. In fact, it just adds fuel to the fire in a lot of cases because their brain is seeing everything as a threat. And if they think they're under threat from what you're doing, they're going to fight for their lives, sometimes literally. And so as your child is healing, you have to relearn the ways of parenting that are going to be effective for the stage and healing that they're in. And sometimes you have to do a quick catch up because once you start healing with homeopathy, things take a little while to get to the place where they're safe, because the brain has to believe they're safe first before they start wanting to do math problems, right? They have to believe that they're safe first before they can understand the importance of the responsibilities they need to take care of around the home. And so once they do get to that place, that the inflammation is down enough that they are no longer feeling like they are being attacked and under threat all the time, sometimes we see pretty rapid catch up. But they're still going to go through all the stages. So, you know, we tend to pause. So like, let's say a kiddo gets PANS when they're six, and then they regress to being more like a 3 or 4 year old. And then they get stuck there for a while and you can't really help them. They're more limited in their social interactions. They're more limited in their cognitive ability and cognitive flexibility. So they're not really making the progress that they would normally make. And let's say it takes a year and a half to get to the place that their body is no longer having a fight or flight inflammatory response to infections or other immune triggers, then they're going to start to catch up with the behavioral and cognitive stuff. They're still going to go through the 3, the 4, the 5, the 6, and the 7, and now trying to get caught up to 8. And it's not going to take 5 years to do it. It might take 5 months or less to get caught up. And that can be destabilizing for parents. It can feel like a lot of whiplash or roller coaster in its own realm, not quite as bad as the PANS realm, but still just as difficult, because then we're shifting into things where behavioral interventions, parenting strategies, and whatnot can have a greater impact. But now you got to get caught up so much faster than you were prepared for, because you weren't the one dealing with PANS, even though you were also in your own level of fight or flight because of PANS. So, Jody, I know you've had to work through some of this. I would love to hear your thoughts.
Shifting into like what you're talking about, the parenting stuff is what really, really sticks out to me, because that is where I really, like, for the first time, I could identify my own PTSD. Because I'm like, okay, things are better now. During PANS, we went into some screen addiction. We're better. We need to start doing something about it. I was terrified and I couldn't. I couldn't. I was frozen and I didn't, like, I was so afraid of her getting angry or her having like any type of reaction, even though it had been a long time since she had a rage. I was so fearful of what might happen. And I stayed there for quite a while. And, you know, like you were saying, Dr. Ben, homeopathy has helped me a whole lot. But I would imagine that adding therapy into that, or even having somebody to talk to me about like parenting strategies or anything to like help reset my mind out of what I had just gone through, or even to help me process what I had gone through. So there's like a million pieces of how homeopathy helped me, but then also there's still pieces of me that I'm like, this is just like, I'm like having a post-traumatic response, and what feels like in my head, in my body is going to happen. Like, I know it's not going to happen, but I still can't snap out of that. So I think therapy in that situation is really beneficial. And then the school thing too. Like that is, I think the school thing with Avery, because what you said is exactly what happened with her. She fell behind. You know, we were talking about, you know, going into special classes 1 month, and then like 3 months later, they were wanting to test her for gifted and talented. Mm-hmm. And for me, I think the biggest part was like fear of regression. And so I was all messed up during that time. Avery, not so much because she was younger. I would imagine in older kids, it's much more difficult. But I think that therapy during that shift would have been really helpful too.
Yeah. I have one final thought, but Dr. Ben, I'll check with you first and see if there's anything else you wanted to make sure that you add to this particular topic.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of echoing what you're, I mean, it's messy. The consults can be, it's not, you know, the client doesn't live in a vacuum where we can just sort of look and observe symptoms and sort of relate that to the provider. There's, you know, there's an emotional element or attachment to mom and dad and, you know, the other members of the family where it's hard to sort of just communicate clear symptom picture without sort of other emotions or sort of attachments being brought into the conversation. And that's why we check in every 4 weeks or so and sort of make sure that we have a list of symptoms that we're following or if there's new symptoms. But, you know, at the beginning of each of my calls, and I would assume most of the other providers too, it's just, what have you observed? What's sort of top of mind? And oftentimes that sort of brain dump or that thing that starts the conversation can be very telling. And then we get into individual symptoms. But again, it's not all sort of neat and tied up into little boxes or bundles. We have to sort of get through some of it. But again, homeopathy, we're transcending that or moving past it rather than just sort of sweeping these symptoms under the rug and, oh, you know, let's just not talk about this or, you know, that sort of antipathic or allopathic sort of, it's a different way of healing what we're doing.
Right. And to piggyback off of what you said, which is a perfect segue to my final thought, it was almost like you read my mind, that this does not happen in a vacuum, as we said. And I say this with love, not with blame, but moms and dads are the nervous system of the family. Mom in particular is the nervous system of the family. And until we understand that mom has to be able to regulate her nervous system with whichever approach works for her, homeopathy, therapy, a combination of both, medication, if that's just what works best for you, no judgment. We will oftentimes see things get just a little bit stuck. And in addition to the nervous system, because let me back up, we will see things get a little bit stuck because kids always look to their parents to assess whether they're safe. And if parents don't feel like their kids are safe and they're still responding as if there is a threat around every corner, around every field trip, around every trip to school, every birthday party, if they are still feeling like it's a threat themselves and then behaving as if it's a threat, the kid's going to also pick up on that. And there's going to be impacts from that are not necessarily associated with inflammation, but associated with responding to the emotional state of the system as a whole, right? And so being aware of that can be really helpful to get to the final stages of healing. It might be that, yeah, mom is the one that needs therapy to help get through the last little bit, not the kid. Therapy and treatment for parents oftentimes helps the kids get better, even if nothing changes for the kid. The other thing is that when it comes to just reporting for homeopathy and sharing what's happening, I can't tell you how many times in that initial, how are things going? What have you picked up on? What's on your mind? Tell me what's going on in your world that we start our visits with, that it becomes really clear, oh, mom is the one who needs an adjustment today, not kiddo, even though this appointment is for kiddo. Jody, I'm pointing the finger at you because you let me do this, but you are you always stand out in my mind as somebody who, even with how involved you are, how much time you've been through this, that you can still sometimes not recognize when it is you that's not doing well versus your kid that's not doing well. And there's been a couple of times that you've gotten on a phone with me in the past and said, my God, you have to change her remedy. It's driving me crazy, this thing. And then we go through and everything's actually better. It's not gone, but it's better. But you are far more reactive to it. And it's because you needed the support at that time. And so this is why it can be really, really helpful to make sure that parents are getting the support that they need. Again, whether it's homeopathy therapy, homeopathy plus therapy, medication, whatever it is, so that you have the capacity to be a little bit more detached when necessary to the things and be able to sort through, is this a me thing? Is this a her thing? Is this just a normal ebb and flow, that kind of thing, to help just calm the system down and get more clarity.
Yeah, I will agree with everything you just said. And my kids will never know this, but it's really clear in my mind that myself and my husband doing our own work and our own healing has been the absolute most transformative thing in our girls' life. Working on our own issues and our own PTSD from PANS has been for totally different reasons. My husband, one reason, myself, another reason. It has really, really changed things. And you spent years telling me, like, you need to do your own healing. You need to do your own healing. And because I prefer not to feel anything, I was like, no, I'm fine. I'm good. I don't need to heal. Like, I got this. Like, I feel great. I didn't feel great. But I thought I did. I was suppressing until I started doing my own healing and I realized how much I was suppressing. I don't want my girls to learn that. Like, I don't want to be like that. And for my girls and things that, you know, my husband would prefer to change, he's been able to change with doing his own work. And it's really like, if you're able to, man, I highly, highly recommend healing along with your kids, because I would imagine that it would have made a pretty significant difference. And when you were talking a second ago, Dr. Ben, I was like, doing either homeopathy or therapy or something likely would have made me a better reporter. It would have made me depend on you less, Dr. Barr, for therapy services, because that's not what you were there for. You were there to heal my kid. But that's where I was. And I needed that. And it just kind of came out in my appointment sometime.
Yeah. Or your emails. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely my emails.
So I had two actual final thoughts and then we're going to wrap. So we just two episodes ago, we did an episode on fevers and we talked about how there's different presentations. Some kids have no fevers and not having a fever is not necessarily a good thing, right? Not having emotions, not having an emotional reaction to a very difficult, very traumatizing thing is not necessarily a good thing. So when you just, if you got a PANS parent who tells me they're fine, I am 100% certain that they are dealing with a lot of suppression, because there's just, how could you possibly be fine after you've gone through PANS and all of the ways that it impacts your life? So not feeling something is not itself, it's actually, that's a pretty big sign. Like, not having fevers is a pretty big sign that something might be going wonky with your immune system. If you're not having feelings or not having emotional responses to what's going on with your kids, that might be a pretty big sign that there's something going on with your emotional regulation that is going to show up eventually. And then the final thing, the true final thing, is that obviously just the best thing to do if you're questioning whether all of these things, where therapy might be beneficial for your family, what time might be to introduce it, talk to your provider. And I say this because timing can really matter, especially when you're dealing with sensitive stuff. You don't want to stir things up before they're really ready or introduce the concept of therapy before it is likely to be successful. Because for some kids, you get one shot. And if it doesn't go well, they might refuse to participate. And their willingness to participate is vital for it to be successful. And so talking about the timing for introduction of therapy and the type of therapies that might be most beneficial is a good conversation to have with your provider. They're not going to necessarily have the exact right answer, but they can at the very least talk through the thought process with you and help you just work through some of the things to narrow down when it might be the right time and what types of things to consider. All right, I think we'll leave it for there today. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Ben, and giving us your thoughts and making sure we all really understand the ways that we're working with the body, with homeopathy, with therapy, with the different types of approaches for health and healing that we can use, and making sure that we give people the best support they can so they can get to full recovery, because we want to see you put all the things with PANS and PANDAS in your past or find ways to incorporate it into your strengths in ways that benefits you, but that isn't controlling you. Right? All right. Take care, guys.
Bye, guys.
We hope you found this episode helpful, hopeful, and inspiring. We would love to connect with you on social media and have you as part of our amazing community. You can find us on Facebook by searching for Homeopathy for PANS and PANDAS.
If Facebook isn't your thing, you can also connect with us on Instagram and YouTube by searching for Resilience Naturopathic or clicking the links in our show notes. You can also visit our website, resiliencenaturopathic.com.
As always, we value your partnership in advocacy and education. Your support through following, sharing, rating, and reviewing our podcast is crucial in our mission to teach the world about PANS, PANDAS, and homeopathy. So if you found this podcast helpful, please leave us a review. Together, we are making a difference.
And finally, this podcast really is for you. Your questions and feedback help us make sure we are answering the right questions so you can feel confident making the next right step for your kids. Send us your questions or request guests by emailing us at podcast@resiliencenaturopathic.com, also linked in the show notes.